incredibly handsome G-Money here tonight on another Tuesday evening. We are here in the heart of Kahului Town and Maui Comics and Collectibles.
Radio, they can't tell, right?
Kahumana Center.
Right.
They can only tell on Facebook Live. Anyway, I am here with a bunch of nerds and one genuinely amazing, artist.
What were you about to say?
Take the venom out of your voice.
Damn.
That wasn't not what I meant at all.
He's like, anyway, wife, now this? Oh,
that's not what I meant. Anyway,
the Elvira comic.
Let me introduce everybody first. To my immediate left, he is not only a legend in the comic book business.
That's your rate, stupid.
He is also a Maui legend because he wears some amazing Aloha shirts and quite the dapper hat. That's ladies true. And gentlemen, give it up for a comic book legend. It's Mr. Jeff Isherwood in the house tonight.
Yeah. Jeff with a G, bro.
Yeah, Jeff with a G, bro.
He's the real G Money.
He's the real G Money. Also joining us this evening.
These are some blank covers that Jeff was sketching on the beach. Some Batman Who Laughs.
Can I see?
Captain Marvel.
Let me see.
It's only for the audience.
Oh, it's
only for
the audience? Okay, great.
It's on.
Nah, they're okay.
Everyone's a critic.
Damn.
He's gonna leave.
There's sand in those comic bags, so.
Oh, yeah.
So if you take them off the island, you're in big trouble.
You're in big trouble, mister. Also joining us this evening, he is the comic book artist extraordinaire. He is the man who is responsible.
You already introduced Jeff.
He is responsible for the Kukui Project, Disco Thunder Groove
Bug,
and of course, the Milkman always delivers. And if there's one man that can deliver every single week on this show, it's definitely this guy. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Mr. Todd Bernardi. He's in the house tonight as well.
I'll take it. Thanks for clapping and not embarrassing me in front of Jeff.
We would never. Also, joining us this evening, he is the gaming guru. He is the man who wrote an impressive review of Kingdom Hearts 3 that you can take a look at on the Nerdwatch Facebook
really
page
impressive.
Right now. I really enjoyed it.
Words on a page.
I hope you do more of it because you are you're a very good writer, and I enjoyed reading about it. It makes me actually want to finish the game, which I never do, right?
Because that's you want to start the game.
That's right, exactly. It makes me want to start the game is what I should have said. Ladies and gentlemen, give it
did
up for the.
Did you get past the tutorial? To think about
Kingdom Hearts 2.9 right now is where I'm at. So, ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the gaming guru formats of the house tonight.
Yeah. Hi, America. Thank you for allowing me into your home again.
And joining us this evening, after a one-week hiatus, he is the cinema scholar. He is affectionately known as the Cinnamon Scallop, and boy, am I glad he's
back.
Does
anyone say that with affection?
I do.
I'll say
and
it.
And he is the man
you
with the...
You cinnamon scallop. Is that too much affection?
That's a lot of affection.
Should I dial it back?
And he is the man with a sack load of hard media. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up.
Doesn't look very full.
Aaron, he's in the house
tonight. That was skimpy looking sack.
Man.
It looks like
Aaron. That's not full.
It's not full. No, it's not.
The sack's a lot bigger than it needs to be.
It looks like it's been recently emptied.
That's
what you're doing in the bathroom.
It looks 10 pounds heavier.
You're going to go blind.
It looks 10 pounds heavier on Facebook Live, I promise. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, he is the chairman of the comic book board. He is the godfather of the comic books. He is the sinister
minister
of Maui Comic Con. He is also the self-proclaimed comic
Maui
master.
No, just me and Todd just said that.
He is freaky.
Hey, you know what rhymes with freaky?
He is certainly Daddy Leaky.
Is geeky.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you're bad.
He is
what you do.
I think
start that over. Yeah.
I enjoy Leaky much better. Ladies and gentlemen, he's the owner, proprietor of Maui Comics and Collectibles.
My intro sucks.
Give it
worse
up.
And worse every time he does it.
We're between the sheets.
No, that's not my name.
Dr. Daddy Leaky.
My name is actually. It's an actual name. You always make sure I get the worst intro of everybody.
Sweet, I'm excited. And one guy I want to recognize is actually off camera tonight. He is officially the producer of the show. He is the man who is, I guess you could call him the Nerf King. He is
the
man.
Nerf King.
Yeah, he's the roadie. Ladies and gentlemen, get up for Kai. He's in the house tonight as well.
How come you didn't bring any Portuguese bean soup today?
That's true.
Whatever they're paying you, we should double it.
You know, mathematically, you can't, you know,
right. Zero times
multiply
two.
A zero.
Here's another one for you.
Zero times two is two. Zero, I think, right? No, or is it two?
Like
yeah, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Anyway.
There's some zeros in the box.
So listen, we have the legendary Jeff Isherwood in the house tonight. We've had him on the show before. And tonight, Jeff, here's what we're going to do with you. I don't want to yeah. – we know a lot about you already. So I'm only going to ask you
you've
one
– You've been reading my
It's called
Wikipedia is amazing.
It's called stalking, and that's what we do here. But we know a lot about you from our past meetings and the past podcast you've been on. But tonight we want you to be one of the boys. So we only have one important question for you before we actually start the show.
What?
Just need you to break. I need you to break
you.
Down. And I'd say
I have to show you.
He's not going to tell us till the
no,
end.
No, he's not. Yeah.
He's going to keep us in suspense.
All I need Mr. Isherwood to do is break down what is wrong with comic books and the comic book business today in about 5 minutes.
All right.
Wow. He probably has a... no. That's actually something you get him to talk about.
Is that too hard?
I mean, what was the book that you were reading last year that the Marvel Exposé book that...
Oh, the Marvel Comics The Untold Story by Sean Howe. It's really...
really good?
Yeah, it's
a
great...
A lot of people we know are read. Didn't you read that too?
I read one about Marvel. It wasn't... I might have actually read that one. But the last one that I read was the Marvel versus DC Slugfest book. I think that's also by Sean Howe.
Wow.
And I'm reading Super Gods right now by Grant Morrison. And that's pretty fascinating. He gives a history about comics.
Nice. Hey, so Jeff, I got a question for you. Just so that we can do a little refresher for anybody that's just tuning in or listening to the show and are not familiar with you, can you run down your resume for us really quick, sir? And your history in the business.
Okay.
Fifth grade.
So this should take about 40 minutes.
way to fill the show.
It was about fifth grade when I decided I was going to draw comics.
Yeah.
With that childhood...
The Wikipedia pages are very in-depth.
Very.
It was like that childlike mentality. I said, I like drawing. I want to do some art for a living, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't want to commute and do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a picture of Charles Schulz's house and his home in Minnesota, and he had his drawing table in his house, and I said, that's for me. Why should I go anywhere? I want to stay home and work. Mm. And then I discovered Marvel Comics and Spider-Man and all that. And then I realized that there were credits on these books and the Stan soapbox and this whole – the way he made everything so seem so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, man, I want to do this. So I just – plus I had that interest in drawing, I guess. And I just put it in that direction. And eventually I was 16 when I first stopped by Marvel and wasn't remotely ready to work professionally. But, you know, I was getting my feet wet. I was starting to see who's who and all that for real and in person. And ultimately, after many trips back and forth, I was 22 when I started drawing full time.
Wow.
So, you know, it didn't just happen overnight. Everybody says, oh, yeah, well, and this happens at these panels. Somebody says, you get a bunch of professionals up. What did you do? Well, you know, I just started happen to be drawing X-Men issue 438. And, you know, then Kubert calls me and I do this and that. And the other, it's like, nah, it doesn't happen like that. I mean, it may in some respect once you get known by certain people, but they skip out the first 10, 15, however many years of just drawing practice you do, trying to learn everything you can about storytelling, about drawing anything. The human figure is very difficult to do well. It takes a lot of practice.
Hey, and, Jeff.
So
can you draw me?
Yeah.
That
sounded like a challenge.
I was just asking.
Are you going to do like a really weird pose and see if you can catch it?
You're Spider-Man. Yeah. Spider-Ham. I could have said Hulk, you know, but you're not that angry.
No, I'm not that angry. I'd rather be Spider-Man, I think. I think I'd be a good Peter Parker.
You should watch him talk about women's rights. He fires right up.
Oh, right.
Right up. That's true.
Captain Marvel.
Yeah, he's angry about a movie.
I'm one of those incels in the basement.
Yeah, the incel crowd's going to go nuts. Yeah.
So, Jeff, what are some of the credits that are included on your – who have you worked with, worked on, and what comics have you had worked on before?
Well, I started at Marvel, and major titles I worked on were Doctor Strange, the NAM, Conan titles.
Mike Bob Camp. Who you're friends with?
Yeah. With like Bob, he was inking John Buscema on Conan for about 7 years, and then he left that to go co-create Ren and Stimpy. Woo. It's like, talk about a
stupid move.
Right? What a reverse. Yeah, but he was just, you know, he was just getting his chops there working on Buscema. Then when he finally it's just completely off the wall.
It was completely natural because Ren and Stimpy is just – it's absolute classic now. It's just that is just something that is just a remembrance for everybody at this table. We love that stuff. So.
And he does a lot of conventions and he'll – well, he was here not long ago.
He was at the Maui Comic-Con last year.
That's right. Yeah. And people ask him for these requests and – he just comes up with amazing ideas.
He delivers,
ideas.
Man. He's crazy.
Yeah.
And especially Ren and Stimpy, he does, he takes other pairs of any type of characters and he
mashes them up,
and they're just hilarious. Yeah, he's great with that. But anyway, I also drew Suicide Squad for 2.5 years. Things hadn't been, I had finished something at Marvel. Nothing else had really happened. Oh, it was Conan the King. I had finished a series, and the writer, now known as Christopher Priest, James Owsley at the time, he had gone over to DC, so he recommended me, and so I wound up working on the Suicide Squad for a couple of 2.5 years, long before Harley Quinn ever showed up, sad to say, or else, you know, it would be
popular. Were you really sad to say it?
Yeah, but then, you know, it would have been much more popular.
People seem to have a fondness for that early Suicide Squad pre-Harley popular character stuff.
Well,
pre-fantastical characters, they were all, like, pretty human.
Because it wasn't superheroes or villains in a way. Yes, there's some were costume, but it was much more
grounded.
Yeah, it was much more of a spy espionage type of thing.
Yeah, like a Sergeant Fury-ish kind of thing.
Yeah, it was certainly a different thing, and I've gone back and reread a lot of those stories, and I'm going, wow, that's pretty good. I don't even think I realized the subtext and a lot of the subplot stuff that was going on when I was drawing it. I just would get a plot script, and I just draw panel by panel, and not... I can't even remember if I understood what was happening at the time.
That's funny. That's my next question. Like, do you care? I mean, what the script says, you're just going off of...
You shouldn't have mentioned political subtext with G.
No. But I mean, the script itself, it's like one of those things where you're just going off of feeling.
They wouldn't do this.
You know, you have an overarching view, and you're like, hey, this is what I want to do with the character.
Well, I learned using the Marvel plot method. And Larry Hama was the one who really helped me out a lot with that at first. But I was used to getting a 2-3-page story synopsis.
Right.
And I was supposed to break it down into pages and panels. And it was told to me by the editor that the artist knows better how to tell a story than the writer. The writer can set up everything and what's going to happen, right? But the artist should understand storytelling better, so they leave it up to the artist to do that.
Interesting.
And even to this day, my problem now is I get a full script, and I go through it, and I go, I don't know. This could work
this
better.
This camera angle isn't right.
Exactly. This camera or sometimes...
You know what I love to hear about your process? I'm sorry to interrupt, but
go
when
ahead.
You are talking about drawing and with your wife in the room and... she will actually help guide you into, like, that's not realistic. And she'll, you know, you'll do something that she'll be like, that just can't happen with women's hair. And she'll know better.
Yeah, if I show it to her.
I love hearing that little detail.
If I show it to her, yeah. No, I will. Either that or she'll just roll her eyes. And, oh, you're kidding me? You
know. But speaking about the visual storytelling, we had Carl Potts here.
Yeah.
And he did a little lecture on visual storytelling. And he was one of your contemporaries at Marvel.
Oh, yes. At the time. Yeah. And yes. And
I just find that interesting that you guys were all together at the same time.
I knew him briefly. I knew a bunch of people. Didn't know that many people well because I only would go to New York a couple times a year for short visits to see an editor and maybe talk to a writer about what was happening in the next, you know, 6-12 months of a certain issue before they usually got canceled. But besides that, you know,
how's that new universe working?
There's a guy in Toronto who loves the new universe, and he's buying all my pages.
There are some people who watch this podcast who I was explaining to you. There are some weirdos out there who are still fond of the new universe and, you know, collect those comics. And, yeah, so it's been on our radar. But nobody else has really read the new universe.
Yeah, well, I did, 6 or 7 issues of Justice, and it's funny, that one was explained. There were supposed to be 8 titles, I think, and that one was, they had 7, and that was supposed to be a separate kind of entity that was put into the new universe. He wasn't a new universe type character originally, but they just kind of shoehorned him in and then got me to, as someone explained to me, so one of the editors. So, yeah, this is all quite a while ago, right? So some certain things I remember extremely well, like meetings with certain editors discussing how to draw certain things or how to approach drawing, and these some stuff that I remember from when I was a kid, somebody talking about that and other artists. That kind of interest. When you have an interest in something like that, you never forget it. I mean, I'll forget a lot of other stuff in life. But John Buscema, when I was 17, he was in Montreal at a comic convention, and I went to the show, and I stood there and watched him for about 2 hours. I didn't care about anything else that was going on. I don't remember anything except he was sitting there, and at one point I said, well, what's the best way to get into comics? And he goes, pick your favorite artist and swipe his style.
That sounds just like him.
That's a direct quote. And the older I got, the more I realized he's right.
Well,
you know,
that's fascinating.
Kind of is. I mean, yeah, you have your own take on things, but everybody learns from following somebody before them. Yeah. And this is what's happened. I teach at college now, too. And a lot of the students, if something happened before the year 2000, it never existed. You know, it's tough, you know. So I introduce them to all kinds of people from the past going back. I mean, they never heard of Kirby or Frazetta. These people alone Eisner or Wally Wood or all this. I mean, they're not really comic book fans. They're a lot of them, of course, they're anime and manga fans. Mm-hmm. But that, again, is an art form. And that was another one. Was at a show with Michael Golden and Steranko were there. And we had I was saying, what is the fascination with manga? And Steranko said, it's because the readers can copy it easily. They can do the same drawings because they're simple. They're simple to copy.
Oh, interesting. I didn't think about that. That's interesting.
At one part, as a kid, being a fan of the Ninja Turtles, that was actually part of the appeal, is that in any art that you can enjoy and also participate in, which is probably the wide appeal of rock and roll, is you can learn a guitar in like 2 minutes and play any one of your favorite songs. It's like there is mm-hmm. something about being able to participate in the art that you appreciate, you know. Even if you're not good at it, is something you feel like a part of it if you can do it, you know.
Playing guitar is a craft.
It's a craft. Tell that to 90% of the teenage population between 1992 and 2000.
Check Seattle about 92.
There's a little overload in the market there.
Agreed.
But, you know, speaking of Jeff's career, though, because this is, as a kid when I was looking at comics, and this was like prime time for me, was that Namor 50 issue. I already brought it up to you. It was one of my favorite comic covers of all time, and just like sit there and pore over the details and just think about, you know. And you recently sold that art, which is like heartbreaking that it's gone into the ether now, but it was like, that honestly is like one of my favorite comic covers of that era.
I hope that someday,
if you know what I'm talking about, it's the cover where Sue Storm is making out with Namor under a waterfall.
Yeah. I hope that someday they bring Namor to the big screen because he
It'll happen.
Awesome, and he's such a prick in the comic books. He is. He is. Yeah. And it would be perfect for the big screen. He is such a jerk in the comics.
He always has been. I mean,
I know.
From he premiered in the very first timely Marvel comic.
Yeah, he's one of the first mutants. Actually, if you go and read Ed Piskor's Grand Design, which follows the arc of mutanthood from the beginning of comics to current, he starts with Namor. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Can't wait.
Namor and the Human Torch, when the Human Torch was a cyborg, that was the Marvel Comics number one.
Wow, fascinating. Speaking of comics, not to interrupt you, Mr. Isherwood, but it's time to check in with the new comics.
Like he just kind of blew you up.
I did. I didn't. I just had to.
He's like, oh, comic history? Boring.
how'd you guess? No, speaking, I wouldn't go
came
straight.
Came out in 1940.
It's time to check
on the
in
timely
with
imprint.
How much is that issue worth now?
Yeah. Oh, that's a 7-figure book in high grade, 6-figure if in any other grade.
Because that's
wow.
I mean, that's.
Do you see any of that?
It's essentially a contemporary of Action Comics. Yeah. You know, of the Golden Age books, Marvel Comics number one and Marvel Mystery.
That, I mean, it's right up there with Captain America punching
Hitler.
Yeah. The famous cover, of course, is Human Torch melting through a steel wall. Marvel Comics number one.
Wow, that's cool.
It's a lot cooler than Superman picking up a car.
Yeah, it's like, oh, a car, I can do that.
How dare you, Mr. Isherwood, how dare you. Anyway, time to check
it's
in
a
with
Marvel man. Yeah, it's a,
but it's after my car. Marvel is just more fun. What can I say?
Actually, DC had a comic book called Marvel.
I know.
But the funny thing is,
well, and then they stopped printing it because they realized they weren't Marvel.
But the funny thing is, for artists would be, and it was came across in this book. If you were a good company man, you started at Marvel and stayed there forever. Mm. It was harder to get raises compared to somebody who left had gone to DC, which was still considered more the real big old establishment company.
Sure, sure. Mm.
And then you'd come back and they'd say, they want him? Well, we better pay him more to keep him.
It kind of solidified more credibility.
Yeah, it gives you, it gave you that.
Because there are people through the 80s who would be like, I'm over Marvel's crap, and then do a, you know, whatever at DC for, you know, almost a decade and then come back. And
but you know about how page rates really went up? Atlas Comics.
And this is an oddball thing I do. I would love to discuss this someday on an actual nerd podcast. I don't know if you ever know any of those around.
No, maybe we don't know any of those.
Comics someday on it. But Atlas Seaboard, as they refer to it, because the original Atlas was actually Timely.
Right.
Became
but,
Atlas,
I mean,
and then Marvel.
This
but
was in the
Atlas
70s,
Seaboard
yeah.
is, yeah, late 70s, mid to late 70s, early 80s. And there were 23 titles in all. Mm-hmm. A lot of famous writers and artists, great talent. None of the comics ran for more than 4 issues. Most of them ended after 2. But I collect those comics just because when you look at the craftsmanship behind them and the spirit of, I mean, that is really, like, people look at Image and the way it disrupted the industry and the way that, I think always that creators, artists, writers have wanted to have control over what they're creating and not just be told what to do to satisfy a market. Because I feel like artists and writers do know their audience better than editors sometimes, you know. Or if you have someone in editorial who's been a creator, you know, that helps. Because and that showed, and when you go back and look at these Atlas Seaboard comics, they're awesome. And actually, Planet of Vampires was a movie. I think a couple of the other properties were sold off for television rights. Like, this is, you know, worthy stuff. It just, I think the way the company was run, and it just came to a grinding halt very, very quickly.
But what happened was they set up their office across the street from DC Comics. And that was a time when this was before courier services and everything. So every time an artist had finished pages, he or she would go to Marvel or DC in person and hand in pages to get the voucher to get paid. And this is why the comics industry was so small at the time. It was all around New York. You had to live near the area so you could go into the office and hand in your work. So, but Chaykin was downstairs, and he'd see these people coming, and he says, how much you getting paid? 25.
That's a great, like, artist hawk.
He says, you're Chaykin. Getting 25 bucks a page. If you come work for Seaboard for Atlas, we'll pay you 50.
They were paying amazing page rates.
Yeah, told them, we'll double your page rate. And that's all of a sudden, because of that, for the short period of time,
They had the best talent in the biz, all of them.
Everybody were
Neil
the
Adams
other
was Planet of Vampires.
Yeah, they were forced to put up the rates.
That was great. I think that was even though it didn't last long, a great influence on the market. Not the market, the industry.
That's what Valiant did, or is doing. Yeah. They have the highest page rates right now, and they've got some beautiful books. Yeah, currently.
But how do their sales justify that?
I don't know. We barely sell any Valiant.
It's hard. I would love to support them. I love how they treat retailers. I love how they treat their artists, apparently. But they don't sell.
They're licensing stuff.
But the license, yeah, the license is probably...
They're optioning the movies. So, optioning the movies.
Well, studios. Gentlemen, this comic book talk is really enthralling. But
it actually is. If you look at the chat, they actually appreciate us talking about comics.
No, in all honesty, it's time to check in with some really good comic books. Every single Wednesday is New Comic Book Wednesday right here at 275 West Kalamata Avenue here at Maui Comics and Collectibles, and it's time to find out what's new this week in the world of the comic books.
That's not how that's pronounced.
That is absolutely
Adventures of the Super Sons, number 8 of 12.
Nice.
Age of X-Man, Prisoner X, number 1 of 5. More of that Age of X-Man stuff that people are feeling so meh about.
Meh.
I haven't heard anything like any great praise about it.
I think it's all right.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. I just, any other version of Cable than Cable, I'm not enthused about.
DJ's kind of meh about it, so I'm
The art's like middle of the road. It's safe.
Yeah.
Which is, it's better than crap.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
But it's just too safe, I think. Astro Hustle, number 1.
Hell yeah.
No, I don't know. You don't even know what that is. That's Dark Horse.
I think I do know what that is, but I don't want to go on record and be wrong.
You've done it a lot of times.
The covers are listed as being by Riley and Smallwood. Avengers, number 16. Avengers No Road Home, number 4 of 10.
That should have been the name of the movie.
No Road Home.
Oh, that's a good one.
Maybe after Endgame, when they re-kill everybody again.
That's great.
Batman, number 66. Black Hammer, 45, from the world of Black Hammer, number 1. Oh. That's a long title. But it's a very popular book on DC. Jeff Lemire writes it?
Yep. Lemire.
Lemire is his name, I believe.
Lemire. He's the guy that writes Descender and Ascender, too.
Ascender 1 is out yet, or?
It's coming out.
Coming out soon.
Sweet.
Champions, number 3, great. Marvel book.
He's going in the other direction.
Conan. Yeah, ascending, what? I thought he was descending. This guy, that's a Shyamalan twist.
It's about robots.
Yeah. Conan the Barbarian, number 4.
Nice.
Yes.
Although I have to interject, and I started reading the Savage Sword, Ron Garney's one, mm-hmm. that he's drawing, then... writer. Sadly, I never remember writers, but you know.
How convenient.
Sorry. I never do. You know, I remember all the comics I read as a kid. I remember the art. People ask, what did you think of this story and that? I don't know. I just remember
the
art
about
stuff.
Todd Bernardi.
But nevertheless.
When he's drawing stuff.
I like the new Savage Sword. So Garney's doing.
Yeah. What about his story stuff?
It's a rough and ready style. They're coming out every 2 weeks, so I don't know. Is he drawing fast or what? But. They're good. They're really good.
So
I
you
like
only
them.
Remember things that you like.
Of course.
Yeah,
because
course.
If right. I didn't like them, I wouldn't have read them.
I have a question then, before we move on with the comic book list. When's your anniversary?
Why would you ask him that on air with his wife
September
right there?
September the 30th.
Oh, okay.
Okay, very good. Just
what if he couldn't answer it on the spot, man?
I did like the pregnant pause, though, because that was great.
What if he had anniversary dysphagia? You don't know.
Didn't mean to put you on the spot, Jeff. Sorry.
Yes, you did.
I did.
And so Michael Cannon jumped in on the chat, which you were reading Savage Sword of Conan.
I was not on the spot.
I know. You're the man. You are the man.
Michael Cannon agrees with you that Savage Sword is really good right now. The covers are incredible.
How many books are there for Savage Sword?
No, it's a current book.
Is it? No. But I mean, is this a series or is it?
It's on issue 2 now.
It's on issue 2 now.
Yeah, they're. Yeah, it's 2 a, so far, I guess. As far as I know, I haven't seen more, so...
No, what I meant is it going to be like a 12-issue run or a 6-issue run?
It's an ongoing.
He's not doing it.
It's an ongoing. Why?
Is it? I think the first is 6 issues to tell the first story, but I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
it hasn't been capped in a miniseries.
Gotcha.
The thing is, frankly, I don't really... do comic book stores all that often. So I get to come into then. I get to look around and see what's going on. But,
that's cool.
And I don't.
It's going to end up do that clocking.
But this is what's so. This is
going to be. It's going to be a 24-issue run at some point.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
But a lot of artists are like that. Everybody winds up just busy working on their own thing. And,
sure.
And so we don't really see a lot of what else goes on unless we need it for reference, you know. And and again, I haven't drawn comics for either the big companies for about 20 years, you know. So that's why, you know, I'm a so-called legend, I guess. So-called.
First of all,
you're not
so-called. You are.
Who's that?
Be fair.
Well, and you know, you kind of just ran over the fact that I think one of your greater contributions during the 90s was to Doctor Strange, and so I always introduce you with Doctor Strange because people remember that run very well.
Well, yes. Well, it's kind of it was, and that was one of the. Well, okay. I went to Marvel first because I really wanted to draw Conan books. And then later on, when Doctor Strange became available, I pushed to get on that title. And otherwise, things were offered to me, and I took them. But Doctor Strange was one that I went after.
Do you still find him, do you still find that character now, even 20 years later, as enthralling as he was or fascinating for you to read?
I haven't really been reading. I've read a few. And I wasn't that thrilled necessarily.
Gotcha.
It's when you work on a title for two and a half years, you get a very proprietary feeling.
Run is so different.
Becomes your own animal. So somebody else takes it and goes another direction. You go, that's not what I was doing. That's not what I meant, and all
Got
that.
It.
So then you sort of, I don't really want to read this. Sometimes it can go really great, but I just haven't. What I've seen since. Here and there just never really did it for me. I mean, and what's it, Chris Bracciallo's been drawing it? I mean, he's certainly very good. At least, is he still drawing it?
It's been the same artist for about 2 years now.
Yeah, but then again, his take on him, I was wondering what happened, you know, it's like...
I know.
The covers were appealing. They kind of piqued my interest.
I know what we should do.
It wasn't necessarily my cup of tea when it comes to style.
Mm-hmm. We should have Jeff... draw Kukui Project for Todd Bernardi.
I can't afford him.
He's seen the legendary Atlas Seaboard page rates. Todd Bernardi is not going to be able to touch that.
$50 a page. Come on.
Not even 1970s money.
All right. Anyway, what's on the list?
This one I'm excited for is Cosmic Ghost Rider Destroys Marvel History number one of whatever.
That sounds cool.
Which is also very meta because he's kind of destroying history just existing with the Age of the Mashup character. Deadpool number 10. Deathstroke number 41. Let's skip that Disney book right there.
What Disney book?
Whoa.
Frozen number 4.
Yes!
Oh.
I didn't realize there were so many fans.
Just let
in
it go.
I can't wait to get back into Avondale.
The trailer, I hate to say it, but I'm interested in seeing that movie.
Whoa.
Sorry to say.
Our goddaughter just is thrilled to death over Frozen.
I just wonder if they're going to come up with another song that's going to make you want to throw your radio out the window. Oh.
I need more Olaf. In that trailer, that didn't have enough.
There's
Olaf.
Not enough.
Olaf was the hero of the original movie. So.
Well, I can't wait to read your blog about it.
You will.
Doomsday Clock number 9 of 12.
Now I want to write one.
Doomsday Olaf.
Hey, here's one.
Doomsday Olaf.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Doomsday Olaf.
That's good.
Fart Night number 1.
Oh,
you heard that correctly. Fart Night. It's a play on Fortnite.
No.
Really?
Yeah, yes.
No.
I didn't know if you got how clever that was.
Say, that was so clever.
Right?
Whose house is that going to be?
That's going to be... It doesn't even list a
whose
publisher.
Whose house here? Whose house here is Fortnite? Is Fartnite? Which, who
I'm
wins?
Good. If it's an actual Fartnite...
Well, he's
Fartnite,
a gamer, so...
If it's an actual Fartnite,
I
guess
I get it by default.
Yeah, I think so.
Usually Tuesday nights at the Nerd Watch, it's Fartnite.
That's all me.
That's
all me.
G wins.
All me.
He definitely supplied it. Female Furies, number 2 of 6. That's a DC book. Big Bart is in that, I think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Jeff, you know what's going on in every comic right now, right?
Absolutely not.
Green Arrow, number 50. Green Lantern, number 5. That's the Grant Morrison run. Harley Quinn, number 59. The Immortal Hulk, number 14.
Nice.
With those great... That's not even Alex Ross anymore. It's a different artist. But in the Alex Ross painted style.
It's not Alex Ross anymore?
Somebody else.
I'm
going to
boycott
covers,
it,
I think. I think.
Hey, somebody picked Mortal Hulk, somebody Mortal swiped his style, series. Right?
Yeah, somebody swiped. You're right. Yeah, yeah, you I guess go. So. There it is.
Justice League, number 19. Meet the Skrulls, number 1 of 5.
That's oh, how relevant, cute.
Relevant
how cute.
To relevant to Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel.
So, mm-hmm. Paper Girls, number 26.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sweet. Can't wait. Waiting for that.
Ronin Island, number 1. I don't even know what imprint that's on. Star Wars, Age of the Republic, Padme Amidala. Every time these come
is
up
on
my...
Is that an IDW book or is that a Marvel book?
It's still on Marvel for now. Marvel, yeah. But I thought it was Dark Horse that was coming back to the Star
IDW
Wars
IDW had
stuff.
The license for like the...
They got the kiddie stuff. The, they yeah. do Adventures and right. Vader's Castle and stuff like that.
And then Dark Horse did like an art book. Like the art of one of the, okay. the animated
It's okay. Don't
series.
Worry about it, though, because as we all know, Disney's shutting down Marvel Comics. So it's
yeah, it's happening it's because happening. It was an internet rumor. It's true.
But that, I mean, if you listen to conservative radio, I guess so.
No, that was in comicbookresources.com or yeah, whatever right, it was. Right. But it's like, what is going on? I was like, I didn't believe it the first time I read it.
I take
it. I was
everything.
Like, that's so stupid.
CBR is, take it with a grain of salt.
It's like, not even close.
But the Age of the Republic one-shots are incredible. If you like Star Wars and you are interested in finding out in continuity things that are happening oh. that are actually, you know, are in canon. These are fun stories about characters you care about that don't necessarily get that much screen time.
I loved everything about every single episode 1 through 3 with the exception of Padme.
Oh, stop.
I liked everything but Padme.
Jimmy J said that Ronin Island is from Boom.
Oh, it's Boom. Okay.
Sweet.
So, Star Wars Vader, Dark Visions, number 1 of 5.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. That's on Marvel, so you know it's a big boy book.
Yeah, but Padme's in it.
She's definitely in some of those visions.
She died of...
No!
She died of a broken heart, you guys.
Man, with all those droids, you don't think they'd know how to fix her?
They couldn't fix her.
Useless med droids.
Even in the future past, they couldn't fix her.
Suicide Squad Black Files, number 5 of 6. Uncanny X-Men, number 13.
African-American Files.
They've been uncanny for 50 years.
They're only up to 13? I mean, what's this renumbering nonsense?
Yeah, they do it with all... Because number 1 sell.
They do it...
As stupid as that makes the audience look, number 1's always sell.
They do it until they reach like another like amazing 800 kind of
but
book,
that's
and then they go back Todd, to...
But Todd McFarlane legacy. Made that famous, didn't he? By renumbering his stuff like that? No, well, okay.
No, he came out with Spider-Man 1, but that was a whole new book.
Oh, gotcha.
That was a whole... They gave,
that was Marvel.
Gave him a whole time.
I mean, if you look at Image, they, mm-hmm. you know, Savage Dragon and Spawn are both in the 200s.
They would never renumber because they're both going for... They're trying to break the Cerebus record.
Mm. Ah.
For independent, longest-running book. Spawn's about to break it. And then
Cerebus was 3-something?
It was 300.
300 even. Hmm.
And so once Spawn gets to 300, it's going to tie it. Once Spawn gets to 301, it'll break it. And then Savage Dragon's not that far
it's
behind.
Not, yeah, they're a couple issues apart.
Sounds like how many goaltender wins you can do to beat Jacques Plante of the Canadiens, you know?
Another sports reference.
We're all
hockey reference.
I made one last week, and the whole room just went. Sports.
But that's the big thing, you know. Like
how many fart nights is that?
Walking Dead number 189. Mm. The show is getting gruesome. Actually, kind of piqued my interest and made me want to tune back in. Young Justice number 3, and. Ziggy Pig Silly Seal Comics number 1. That's a Marvel book.
Nice.
It's a number
did
1.
Did you buy like
it's a number 1.
How many did you order?
Did
you
6. I,
did you didn't order
I hedged
enough.
My bets on that one.
You didn't order enough to get the alternate cover?
Yeah, hell no. there's no need for
so
that.
So out of all those, how many are variants?
I've actually began just making a habit of not ordering variants. I don't want to feed into that. And, you know, there was a great Bleeding Cool article, somebody's speech at the retailer summit, who he basically nailed all the problems with the direct market.
Brian Higgs.
And I don't know what his role in the industry is, but he nailed almost all the problems.
He owns two stores in San Francisco and sued Marvel over distribution.
Yeah, sure.
Back in the 90s. And so he's been the guy that he throws bombs. And so
wouldn't that be Diamond though? That's, I mean, I know that Marvel's making Marvel the variants, but
Marvel had their own distribution back in
and
the
if
90s.
You and gotcha. If you even so see how he, what yeah, they're doing gotcha. What they're doing now with Diamond is they are using Diamond but as their own distribution. So it's not like they're subject to Diamond's rules like every other publisher.
Yeah, I mean, if they pulled out, if Diamond wouldn't be able.
And that's what makes Diamond a monopoly is the fact that Marvel mm-hmm. and DC distribute exclusively through them. If they didn't do that, they wouldn't be a monopoly, but they are. And that's it. That's the only reason.
Other distributors years ago tried to make a go of it, but it didn't work.
Well, there used to be just several of them anyways, as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. and they all, after the crash, consolidated into Diamond, mm-hmm. which was unfortunate for us in the current day retailer market. You know, I just finished the comic book list, but I just want to revisit something that John J. Murakami said.
Go right ahead.
Is that Usagi Yojimbo, after its almost entire history, I mean, it started at Fantagraphics Books, but has been on Dark Horse almost like after 3 years since they started. They are going to IDW and going full color. It's been a black and white comic all these years, and they're in the 170s now in Dark Horse. They're going to go to IDW and become a full color comic monthly. So that's a huge deal because that is also one of the very few independently owned and created comics around
today.
Good
God, that Stan Sakai never takes a friggin' break.
And we just want to say thank you to Stan Sakai for sending us. He sent us over $1,000 worth of Stan Sakai, you know, merchandise from Usagi Yojimbo and T-shirts. People have been buying the pins and the shirts and the books. And we still have a lot left if anybody's interested. We ship to Outer Islands and elsewhere. Get in touch with us. But, you know, he really supports he has that independent spirit. Like, he, you know, somebody who can be so successful and so popular. He was talking about optioning his Usagi Yojimbo for a cartoon coming up, and hopefully that's still in the works and coming up. But, you know, that is, like, unheard of. Well, actually, no. People are owning their stuff now. They're becoming smarter about it. But it's unheard of for a comic from the 90s or 2000s to still be creator-owned. Especially being that popular.
That guy's got to slow down. He's insane.
He's awesome.
He is crazy, but he's really good. And he's a very very humble and nice guy. I like that Stan Sakai. And he drew me once. He drew me like one of his French girls. Anyway.
He drew you more like an upside-down light bulb, but that's... I didn't...
First of all, so that I said, French girls.
Oh, okay.
All sorry. Right, anyway.
How many French girls does Stan Sakai have?
Freedom girls.
There you go. Anyway, moving on to some interesting news. First of all,
interesting news.
Well, more interesting news. want to say that, ironically enough, in the nerd world, we lost, ironically, three people this week so far.
Ironically?
I can't believe it. I mean, it always happens in threes.
You wouldn't think anybody would have died this week.
No, but it always happens in threes.
Oh, man, the irony.
I don't think it was irony. I think it was tragic.
Well, it was very tragic.
Tragically, we lost three people.
It's we lost Luke Perry at the young age of 52.
I thought he was 52 on 902.
He should be older by now.
Yeah.
No, we lost.
He had the crow's feet.
He just had a
that was
soul.
That was crazy. I woke up this morning and yesterday morning.
Good old Dylan MK.
And I could not believe it. I was like, I looked at my thing and I was like, oh, he's in the hospital. And then I was like, oh, he passed away. I was like, whoa. And then Keith. That was crazy. I was not expecting that at all. And then Keith Flint of Prodigy passed away. Well, he, from what I understand, he committed suicide. Is that not correct?
That is true.
Yeah. So yeah. And then last but not least, if you're a wrestling fan, the legendary King Kong Bundy also passed.
Wow.
So he was one of the guys when I was a youngster. He scared me because he was in the steel cage with Hulk Hogan. That was some really good stuff. Anyway, King Kong Bundy was a fun guy to watch on wrestling for sure. So that was interesting. So we lost three guys already in at the beginning of March. Luke Perry, of course, famous for 90210. He is also famous for he's in Riverdale. New Riverdale.
He's Archie's dad.
And last but not
whatever
least,
they're going to kill him off.
I don't know what they're going to do, but I do know
they're going to do like the Poochie on The Simpsons, where they float the animation cell away.
Well, that's what they
do. They're going to do. They're going to kill him off with the Punisher.
Well,
they're
the Riverdale. Doesn't that happen
Archie
in Riverdale?
Archie versus the Punisher. There you go.
That's what happens in Riverdale. A lot of murder, I guess, in this show or something.
Well, yeah, but
They stopped production.
Not too.
They canceled
like the
him on
cast.
Netflix, so they John Barenthal really needs a
yeah.
Cameo.
He's like, I'm gonna wipe him out.
So wait, they, Archie's yeah, dad is gonna be.
They stopped production. Meth dealer so I think or they're gonna try and figure out a way to write him out.
Or write him out of the show.
Yeah. And John Murakami brings something up while you're talking about Hulk Hogan. Is Chris Hemsworth in a Hulk Hogan biopic?
Yes, I saw that. I'm skeptical, but I'm looking forward to seeing Chris Hemsworth as
let's see how he does
as an American,
as a real
Speedos.
American.
I don't think he can play Terry Bollea though, because
Terry Bollea doesn't.
That's right. Hey Todd, why don't you be quiet? Yes, that's right.
Luke Perry was in The Fifth Element?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
No, but Luke Perry,
he was in the very beginning,
very beginning of the movie.
He's the archaeologist.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And we can.
Yeah.
He does
he's
have.
The one,
that's right. Yes.
The
okay. Yes.
He does have one final role that we will see him in. He's going to be in the next Quentin Tarantino.
That's right. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yep. He will be in that as well. Mm-hmm. So, you three shall be missed for sure. Kind
speaking
of
directly to him, huh?
I'm trying
it's
to.
Very personal.
I'm trying. Well, I listen to Prodigy. Luke Perry, but I know his work. And of course, we cannot forget to mention Luke Perry's best work was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I love that movie.
Oh, the movie, yeah. Of course. Yeah. He was great in that movie.
He was a boyfriend, right?
Yeah, he was great in that movie. So, and him and David Arquette were great. So, without a doubt, had to recognize that as well. Speaking of nerd, also in the nerd news, we got a couple of just want to let everybody know that this Thursday night at the Regal Mayo Mall Megaplex, the Nerd Watch will be doing the premiere of Captain Marvel.
Yes.
This Thursday, 7:00, Captain Marvel. It's going to be a lot of fun.
The introduction of the Kree and the Skrull.
The Kree and the Skrull are all
Marvel
happening.
Cinematic. I already got them on the TV show,
this Thursday night.
Yeah.
Well, hey.
Who watches that?
Don't ruin it. But Captain Marvel, 7:00 p.m. The Nerd Watch will be there, and we're going to be doing the premiere. It's going to be one heck of a good time.
That's how we got the Inhumans.
So you're not going to want to miss it. I think there are still tickets available to the 7:00 show. And they just added a 7:30 as well.
Who doesn't want to see Karnak as a ganja farmer?
The 7:00 sold out super
fast.
Oh,
did it? 7:00 is all sold out. All right, cool. Well,
we're going to be my favorite arcs.
I'll be at 7:30.
Oh, you're going to go to 7:30? I thought you bought for 7:00. What?
It'll sold out by the time I even...
Look at this coordination. You guys just
oh, man.
Looking
he
so
told
professional.
Me he bought
it's
for 7
a good
o'clock.
Thing we're presenting
All right, so we're going to be doing the premiere of the 7 and the 7:30 at the Regal Maui Mall Megaplex in Maui Mall. You're not going to want to miss that. And speaking of that, the premiere happened...
Whatever
for,
one you see is that.
It's, that's the one we're going to be in, yeah. Of course, Captain Marvel's premiere happened, I think, on Monday night, and then there was another one tonight in the mainland, and Jeff Isherwood, some of your colleagues, friends, legends in the comic book business went to go see it.
That's right. Larry Hama, who I mentioned before, he was the friends and family of Marvel in New York. I guess they had a showing there. So there's a picture of him on his Facebook feed with Chris Claremont and Carl Potts, whom you all good buddies with, and Janice Chang is in that one. She is a longtime letterer. Worked a lot with him over the years.
There was four people in the picture. I didn't know who the fourth was.
Yeah, it's Janice. And he liked it quite a bit. And
Fantastic.
He said some people on his feed, as I was going down, I didn't like it. And he goes, well, you know, this is my feed. I'll see if I like it. If you want to slag something on your own feed, you know, just scroll past it. That's what he says. You know?
Did you just but say you're going to scroll it. Past it? That's good.
Scroll past it. This is something that gets this. I think this is something you all still have to realize.
What's that?
That when thing like the Kree Skrull War first came out, when was that? Like
that was like 70, the early 70s.
Early 70s?
71, 72.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was a big deal in comics, and for comic fans, it was a big deal. And once again, the average public out there who didn't read comics, they had no sense. They had no idea what was going on. That's what I like. It's taken so long, but these movies are putting out these fantastic cosmic ideas that the general public had no idea. They had no idea that Marvel was doing such advanced kind of stuff from Kirby on down and later on that. These kind of ideas were being presented in comics because most people thought comics were still these kiddie version stuff from the 30s and stuff. It wasn't like that at all. And so even me saying I was going to draw comics was kind of like poo-pooed a lot because yeah, it wasn't something you'd take seriously. And I said, yeah, but they have no idea what's going on here.
Right, right.
And now, I mean, sometimes they're hit and miss a little bit, but still, you get the general public is starting to wake up to this, the whole idea of Thanos and all this. And my stepson happens to his whole take on the Infinity War movie was the Avengers got destroyed by a guy that looks like a shriveled prune. Like, what? But, you know. Well, what the heck, you know?
Well, okay,
but still, just the idea of this.
Do you like how it's been portrayed on the big screen? I mean, they've really got everybody involved. I mean, the audience involved. They're really looking forward to Endgame.
I know he liked Doctor Strange a lot.
Oh yes,
and he got to meet Mr. Bumberbunch Crinkle Fries.
That's right.
Cumberbunch Crinkle Fries? Got it.
Cumberbund Crinkle
Fries. Our friend Ben.
Yeah. You met him, huh?
He's a friend, Ben, yeah.
Wow. You met Mr. Cumberbatch.
Yeah, Amanda and I, we both met him. Yeah.
Wow. Fantastic.
I was invited to the premiere of that one.
Look at you.
So we went to that. That was a completely out of the blue surprise. Like 2 weeks before the premiere, I get this email. Did I tell you about this before?
Yeah,
you told the whole story.
Yeah, yeah. So that was.
But I thought that was great that they honored. Actually admitted that they borrowed some of the stuff that you drew, and you know, because it's hard for, especially with the movies, for anybody who worked on things that even inspired what's in the movie to get credit. So I think that was pretty cool that they acknowledged that they borrowed a lot from. You know, you explained that the car crash scene where he gets his fingers crushed. The frames you drew are like almost a mirror image of each other.
Yeah, well, the crash was kind of flopped to the left to right, right to left. But it was something that Derrickson had talked about that he and had showed Cumberbatch or Ben, whatever. He'd shown them a lot of the comics because Cumberbatch was not familiar with the character.
Sure.
But Derrickson had been a fan of Doctor Strange all along.
Yeah.
So
nice.
He combed through tons of issues, picking out bits and pieces that he could put together and use in the script. So in terms of the origin. One thing, though, I do find, I think now that Marvel's getting full control over all the movies, ultimately soon, there's one more Sony Spider-Man picture coming out, I believe. Mm-hmm. Besides that, it should go better. I think they'll have a better feel, and I think the sense of they should, the feel of them should work better, and things like the with the Black Panther doing so well this year is good. Captain Marvel, I mean, we'll see how much we like it.
Right.
I saw Ant-Man and Wasp not long ago. Again, a fun movie. Again, it wasn't trying to be too much. You know, I mean, and yet, it's a great visuals going into that subatomic world and all that kind of thing. So. It's a parallel world to the comics to me.
Sure.
It's not the same as Marvel's printed books.
Right.
It's a whole different thing. But the thing is the audience is so huge for the movies that is the version of Marvel that people are coming to know now.
Sure.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Absolutely.
That's their frame of reference. And the thing is, this is my thing as a store owner, is I'm very anti-gatekeeper fan, is, you know, a lot of people will be like, oh, they only watch the movie and now blah, blah, blah. And I'm a real fan because I know what happened in the comics. And it's like, you know, they got to make some space for their, you know, the properties to grow. It's sometimes the fans can really hinder that.
And yeah. That's something, again, I kind of got over that feeling many years ago myself, thinking, some of the earlier versions, I couldn't even watch them. You know,
the 1990s Captain America didn't do it for you?
Yeah.
With Red Brown? Oh, yeah, those are brilliant.
Hey, I liked those.
But then you're going to have, then you'll be hammering all those checks after Doctor Strange 2 comes out, and then that'll be awesome.
We'll see what happens. It'll be great. I mean, I would absolutely love to work on that film, but it's tough to really.
We got a
get into
question
that
in the chat from DJ Cavicane for you.
Okay,
have you ever worked with Steve Lealoha? Because
I haven't.
You haven't? Okay.
No, I know of his work. I never met him either. So,
and that's actually DJ Cavicane's literal uncle. Not local style. It's my uncle. But
you met DJ, of course. He's the creator of Exilion. You met DJ, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
His wife's uncle.
Wife's uncle. Yeah.
So anyway, speaking of that, in the last few minutes of this show, There's two things I want to cover. Actually, maybe it's going to be one thing. Well, we're going to get to hard media, but before we get to hard media,
jeez,
I do want to cover something that we never got a chance to cover.
Make him earn his spot back.
And that, and that is, I want everyone's impression of the all-new Dark Phoenix trailer.
Why didn't they cancel that? With I would rather see New Mutants than Dark Phoenix.
I'm going to have to find it and watch it.
Oh, are you?
It's, did you like any of the other Fox X-Men movies?
They're all
that
brilliant.
Might impact your thoughts on it.
Well, you know, I worked on a couple of them. So.
That's right. So you're... Guys, oh, you worked on Apocalypse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which is towards the end where they're starting to do the right things with the characters and properties. I still don't think that it's what the X-Men could be. The X-Men were like this amazing... in the 90s was just like beyond
Mr.
compare.
Gatekeeper over here.
I'm not like Gatekeeper. I did not
that's
like...
That's not how they were in the books, man.
No, that's not it. Because I don't even care how they were in the books. My real love was the animated series. And that was like the pinnacle of a good representation. You know, you condensed people's stories. You did right. away with a lot of what's in the comics. Trim the fat or whatever. You changed them to fit the screen. But it was perfect. And now you get the Fox X-Men movies, which they remove all the fantastical elements for these clearly fantastical characters. And it didn't work for me.
I don't know. That Dark Phoenix trailer actually looks like an actual legitimate X-Men movie, kind of, to me. I don't know. Am I wrong, Todd?
Can it?
Well, I like the new ones. I'm better than the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. And I like... Last Stand is my least favorite. So I'm glad that they're going to do Dark Phoenix.
At least try to redo it again.
At least try to do it. And I think that...
unless the Shi'ar show up, it's not going to be great.
Well...
It seems like it's totally earthbound. I mean, for the Phoenix Force, it doesn't make sense.
It would be perfect if the Shi'ar... And then that can go into the Kree and Skrulls.
No, or they can just end it at that movie and let Disney take
over. Well, that's what I would do. That's what I would. That's the way that they. There's got to be some sort.
Well,
of
I just want them to, just like Fantastic Four, start fresh.
Well,
that feels gatekeepy.
That's right. Yeah. Well,
I just appreciate what Marvel's doing. They understand their fans.
I mean, Fantastic to get Fantastic Four into the MCU is going to be a bit tricky because a lot of the stuff that happens in Avengers all unravels from Fantastic Four.
But they
Four
still
original.
Got a lot of cosmic stuff to tie into. They could weave.
Well, I mean, you don't have to do Fantastic Four because it felt like Guardians of the Galaxy fulfilled.
I don't think it'll be hard to roll Fantastic Four in. It's the mutants that I think they're going to have difficulty trying to explain.
Especially since the mutants are earthbound.
I think they're wrapping up.
And all this stuff.
If they are going to bring them in.
That's
if
what
they
I think.
Are going to roll them
Dark
in.
Phoenix feels like, I mean, and that could be completely wrong, Dark Phoenix's trailer feels like this is kind of a wrap-up of the Fox X-Men series, obviously.
Of course, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, but to be honest.
I mean, did you see Magneto's turtleneck? I mean, comics accurate,
you're
right?
You're such a dork, bro. First of all, the top five X-Men movies are obviously the top five.
That key ring for that gate is awfully heavy, man.
All right, I don't mind keeping that gate.
Yeah. It's getting awfully big. That key ring is huge. Anyway, So top five have got to be Last Stand, First Class.
Did you say Last Stand?
Apocalypse.
That's what he said.
You
Logan
idiot.
And Days of Future Past.
Yeah, why is the Last Stand on there? Why is the Last Stand?
Let me tell you why. I will defend Last Stand to the ends of the earth. The only reason why
that's
is
like
because
saying Wolverine Origins. Why don't you just have the best of the Fox X-Men.
It's because Last Stand actually felt like a comic book movie.
No, it didn't.
It did.
No, it didn't.
You guys are nuts. It felt like a comic book movie.
Because when adults watched it, they were like, "This is stupid and inane."
I love how you
just like how I view comics.
Your favorite Fox property mutant.
Yes, I did.
And like Deadpool is nowhere near.
No, I just said top five X-Men. Sorry, X-Men.
Deadpool's
Deadpool is an X-Men.
No, well, I mean Deadpool's as in like
X-Men,
as dude. I mean as in what I meant.
He went
as
inside
in,
the mansion and everything.
Oh
yeah, Colossus made it official.
It was suspiciously empty. Like they didn't have the budget.
That's true. Good point.
But then all the Fox X-Men were behind a door, hiding from them.
You know, anytime we bring up cinematic X-Men, it always devolves into a brawl.
It does, every time.
John J. Murakami knows this about us. He just posted, fight, fight, fight.
John, if you want to fight with us, just bring up underwear on the outside of the costume.
It's true.
Which is where they belong.
It's easier to draw.
Right?
See, you got a master over here agreeing with that. See?
Yeah.
It's very true.
Underwear on the outside,
but the
man.
Thing with the movies is, it's not just like with the comic, you have Claremont and Byrne doing it, right? They could get on a roll. With the movie,
God, I wish.
You have writers and producers, and you got like 25 people all putting their two cents in, and then and singer, and then singer's trying to do his thing,
right?
And he's taking it and tweaking, and this guy is a, he's a tinkerer. He was never happy, and he was fiddling and fooling around with stuff constantly. He doesn't just read the script. Let's film this. When I was doing storyboards and stuff, I barely even had a script to work with.
Wow.
It was weird, and none of us knew what was really going to happen next, because he's doing them. And the problem also I find with that is there are just so many characters.
Yeah.
You have like, a couple of scenes to try and build the character? It's very quick. It's not like a Netflix series where you get 12 hours with two characters and you get sick of them after almost, because it's just too much. The story's too slow. These movies, you get a dozen heroes. You can't focus on all of them.
Sure.
So there's stuff that we would like to see that just gets left by the wayside, and they have to make these decisions to make it fit in two and a half hours.
And that's why I have an affection for First Class, because that's Matthew Vaughn's version of the X-Men. And that's why I have a fondness for Last Stand, because that's Brett Ratner's attempt at Last Stand. It was outside of the Bryan Singer, the Singerverse.
Well,
the X-Men Singerverse.
First Class is probably my favorite.
First Class is technically my favorite.
First Class, in order of most palatable as it came out, was probably the first one that I sat down and was like, I'm not going to actively hate this one.
Yeah. I think that one felt like a really good. I wish they could have done that with the new Fantastic Four movie.
Sure.
And set it actually in the 60s and like give it kind of a retro feel.
That's what Matthew Vaughn did, and that was so great about First Class. And I think that was the way I wanted the X-Men series to go, I guess, and then it didn't. But then again, once we found out that Disney was going to kind of take control and Marvel's getting their properties back, we obviously knew that this was going to end somehow. And Dark Phoenix, like I said, let's be honest. I mean, Alika doesn't like it, but I have to tell you, this could be a very decent X-Men movie and kind of wrap it up for Dark Phoenix.
Well, look, I don't think they're stupid enough to backtrack. I think that from First Class to Days of the Future Past to Age of Apocalypse, they've been getting better.
Yeah.
My hang-up is always the costumes, and they're actually working on that. But
Psylocke.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they got a lot of really good comics accurate stuff. But at the same time,
was that your? Psylocke. By the way, Jeff, did you have any influence on that, getting the costumes back into Apocalypse? Because they did that rather well.
Well, I did design her katana.
Nice.
Nice.
And so, I did get to see them on set one time, and I say, yeah, I see. Costumes are coming along really well.
That's something that will draw me in as someone who already has like a disdain a little bit for what had come before. That being said, though, and it's not that I didn't like the Grant Morrison run or the costumes in that. It's not a strong finish to the trajectory they had in going with the comics accurate stuff. I think the strongest one was Days of the Future Past, because that Omar Sy as Bishop in that movie Bing Bing as Blink, I think those are two of the better representations of comic characters in the whole X-Men franchise, aside from Alan Cumming as Nightcrawler in the second one. There's some really strong moments across the entire series, but none of them really stand out as strong movies, and that was kind of my major problem with them.
Did people realize how popular Fan Bing Bing is in China?
Yeah, she's she got kidnapped, didn't she, by the Chinese government or something? It was some sensational story I'd read.
Funny thing is, I did see her one day at filming. I happened to get a chance to see a little filming, and it was her and Warpath, the fellow playing Warpath.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, it was a reaction shot. There's a tennis ball hanging from the ceiling with the Sentinel's head. It was a boom camera, because it's all green screen, right?
Yeah.
And Fan was there, and it was the funny thing is, it was a shot where, like, action, and Warpath, he'd go, like this, and she would go, like, she would do, 1 second later, she'd go,
tennis ball.
Her face didn't move because
she was made like a porcelain doll, and if she if she moved, it would crack.
Right, that makes sense.
But he was like, bam, and she was just always a one, that 1 second behind. And they did it over and over because they swung the boom camera in at different intervals. Like they had, I mean, that was part of the way Singer shoots everything. And then the other scene I saw was with Apocalypse in the going towards the Cerebro, and there was Angel and
his horsemen with him.
Yeah, Storm, Magneto, and Psylocke, and of course, it took a long time to fix Oscar Isaac's costume because he had all these little pieces on. They kept falling off, and they had to glue them on and all this kind
That's
of
why he couldn't move his neck, right? I guess.
Yeah, he was
doing this a lot.
Yeah, but he, you know, he was going, "Oh, we'll be revealed soon, my children." You know, he kept saying this over and over.
Yeah,
and
he said
you
heard it like 100 times.
Yeah, but he's like, do it over and over, a little bit slower. Okay, I want the camera to pan in a little sooner. Well, don't pan in until he turns, and then start moving it. You know, like every shot was different.
Wow.
It's not
really
that they
ridiculous.
Not that they were doing it wrong, but when they came to editing, Singer wanted to have all the different options available so he could pick the shot that worked best. Hmm. He didn't want to have it necessarily figured out ahead of time. He was always – that's how he works. He's very slow and deliberate that way.
Me, as a movie guy, I like hearing that stuff, and I'm sure Aaron does as well. But I'm really –
but I don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a sign of a great director.
That's right. But anyway, if
great
you're not
director. He's going to be in prison soon.
Dark Phoenix. Anyway, if you have not seen the Dark Phoenix trailer, check it out. It's online right now. This could be the one that rules them all.
Could be the last one that Fox ever makes.
That's true as well. This could be the last one.
What if MCU doesn't get X-Men?
What?
What if they like?
Don't they leave it?
Don't troll
Fox?
A leak.
It's like everything except X-Men.
Yeah. Just, what if they just leave it at Fox?
Then I
they just bought Fox,
right,
so they could get the X Men.
What if they just
divide that one division and call it Fox X Men Corps and just leave it there.
Kevin Feige's like, psych, I want everything but the X Men.
Yeah, you, Bryan Singer, you have poisoned the franchise. you just hold on.
We want that NFL Sunday
that's
show.
That's right. That's right. Oh my gosh. Anyway,
that's what I think is going
to
happen.
Anyway, before we take off, we have to check in with the man.
Oh, do
we? Yes, we do. The cinema scholar. He is the man with the sack of hard media, and it is quite the week for hard media.
That's a real white sack.
Digital media.
I know it doesn't get much
sun,
does it?
So it's still clean. Hey, Ron, what do we have this week in the world of hard media, sir?
One of the new ones is Scream Factory. They're putting out a collector's edition of The Craft.
Oh, which, does it come with a free soundtrack CD?
It does not.
And,
but there's new interviews with everybody
and
all
Body
that
Works
kind of stuff.
To play Light as a
Feather. Oh, with Robin Tooney and everybody?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Like, there's new stuff. There's a lot
and
of new
Fairuza
stuff.
Bulk?
Yep. Digitally remastered to make the hair scene seem actually realistic.
Does Fairuza Bulk like deliver the DVD to you if you order it?
Unfortunately,
no. I'm sure she needs the work.
Yeah, right. She doesn't get enough work scaring children on a regular basis.
That's true.
But you know, I think it should come with a copy of Return to Oz because
that's
movie
my
traumatized the crap
Bulk
out of me.
Movie.
Yeah, she's aside from the worst witch, Return to Oz.
Return to Oz, my
masterpiece.
What else is coming out there, Aaron?
For the Stephen Dorff fans like me, there's a new Stephen Dorff movie.
Sweet!
It looks really good, actually.
Is it a 2-hour-long vape commercial?
No.
It's about blue cigarettes.
Yeah, right. It's like, you know, when I want to look like a douchebag in vape. It's only blue for me, baby.
He's so cool.
I know I'm wearing
that
t-shirt,
but this is... Is vaping?
This is
because of Stephen Dorff.
Yeah,
because
I saw him on that commercial.
He's only cool because he's smoking, Aaron? Is that right?
I know I'm only wearing a T-shirt,
cool.
But this sports jacket was the only other thing I had, so I put it on over it.
He
and
hasn't
now
been
vaped.
Cool since Blade.
He's been cool
the thing
like
that gets me is you see these Hell's Angels type bikers and their Harleys,
yeah,
and the guy's vaping,
little...
and you walk by and it smells like strawberry.
Yeah.
It's like,
it smells
on,
like they're
you know,
burning
you just
My Little
your
Pony
image.
Doll or something.
That's hilarious. What's the name of the Stephen Dorff movie?
Don't Go.
Don't Go.
It's a psychological...
Don't go see this movie.
Don't go see this movie.
I'm going to see it because it looks great.
All right, what is,
what it's reverse psychology. I like it.
What else?
Very nice.
I'm not sure if anybody here started watching or watched that show, but Krypton season one.
Oh, I would like to see that. I didn't see it was on Sci-Fi.
Are you gonna are you gonna buy the first season? Or are you gonna wait till you get the box set?
I'm probably gonna wait till the whole complete series. Yeah.
What if it goes
season
10 seasons?
One through three?
And if and a Sci-Fi is any indication, no, it's gonna only last for two more seasons, and then we're just gonna buy the box set.
I heard it wasn't that strong.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
But it's a good concept.
Yeah,
I was excited
concept.
About it.
Great
when
concept.
It was coming out.
Yeah, same.
Mm-hmm. What else, sir?
The other one was the big Oscar contender, The Favorite, which I just came from.
Ah, yes, with what's her name? Oh, Emma Stone.
Emma Stone, Olivia Colman.
You know she's a great actress because she can play Hawaiian Chinese like no one's business.
Yeah, I believed it. I was like, yeah, dude. She's not Hawaiian or Chinese. Get this girl an Oscar.
She's already apologized for it on numerous occasions. Numerous
even times. At the Oscars.
I know.
Yeah. Well, that's the best part. It's like, that's the apology that doesn't end.
It doesn't end.
Representation matters.
That's what, shut up, Todd.
Well, I threw my hat in the ring. I want to play Shuri in the next Black Panther.
Wakanda forever.
Wakanda forever.
I finally saw it. I just came from watching it at the theater upstairs.
Oh, The Favorite?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's
you know
where I was before.
And was it your favorite?
You know we had screeners for that, right?
No.
Yeah, nobody gave me any.
Or Don't Go.
Don't Go.
I watched it tonight before.
All right,
the show.
All right.
You're my favorite. Don't Go.
All right. What else come out, man?
One of the two big ones is Creed 2.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was a great movie. Yeah. Great movie.
Not as good as 1.
Not as good as 1, but definitely a great film.
It still holds up.
Yeah. If you have not seen Creed 2... If you're a Rocky fan,
if you wanted to do Rocky 1 through Creed 2 marathon, do you think that would be a worthwhile endeavor?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Just skip 5.
What? No. No. Okay. Now I don't want to trust anything you say because 5 is like the best one.
Oh my gosh. No, it's not.
Well, which one's
I punching the head a little too many times. You know,
which one was your
the best one is Rocky 3. Without a doubt. But what's funny about the Rocky series is this is how masterful Sylvester Stallone is. You could watch Rocky 1 and then skip everything else and go right to Rocky Balboa, and it's still a complete story. That's what's cool about it. You could watch the very first Rocky from 1979 and then watch Rocky Balboa. Or
you could start at Creed 2.
That's right.
And be done. I like it.
I like it. That's good. That's good. But anyway, Michael B. Jordan is fantastic
Michael
in both
B. Jordan,
great movies.
Balboa is actually very good.
Yeah, Rocky Balboa is fantastic. But Creed, his portrayal of Creed is fantastic. The first Creed film is good. Creed 2, not as good, but still a great film. So
my family likes the 2 more than
but
they
how
like
do
the
they
first one.
Wow. How do they stack up against Raging Bull?
I love Raging Bull. I'm a huge fan of Raging Bull.
And
so,
we're
a different animal, though.
Oh, for sure.
Where in this canon does Million Dollar Baby fit in? Like,
oh, yeah.
Remember when Sylvester Stallone paralyzed that girl?
That was Clint Eastwood, you think,
sorry. They're both old. I don't know.
That would be my first choice.
And then, he fed her his tongue that he chewed out like a baby bird. Are we rewriting this movie?
I thought we were rewriting this movie. I believe you.
Oh, my gosh.
She tries to commit suicide at the end by eating her own tongue.
She tries. Oh, really? Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
By the way, that is a great movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's
like, how are the costumes, though?
Yeah,
are they wearing from the outside?
Are they comics accurate?
But she turned out not to be Ronda Rousey, so.
What else is coming out, A-Ron?
The one that I picked this week.
Oh, you're going to pull it out of your sack? What you got?
Sack is Instant Family.
What the crap?
With Mark Wahlberg.
It's now, been certified fresh, y'all.
There's a sticker that says certified fresh.
Oh, man, what?
Hey, this was like the surprise movie of last year.
That sticker cost a lot of people their souls.
If there's one man who is a superhero among men, it is Mark Wahlberg.
I love Mark Wahlberg. That movie looks like hot refried garbage. It looks like 80% of the Ice Cube
But that's, see, that's
movie
the thing.
Catalog.
The trailer looked very...
garbage.
Like families, family, daddy's home.
About this.
But it's
that
pretty edgy.
A Disney star.
Yeah, it is.
That's a dead giveaway right there.
Well, I tell you what,
she's the future of Dora the Explorer.
Yeah,
she is
Dora the Explorer. I'm very interested in seeing Instant Family, actually. And there is one more release.
It is rather edgy.
Do you just add water? Or? Yeah.
It's an instant family, baby.
I'd just rather leave him dehydrated in a frozen, perpetual cryogenic
Last
state.
Last but not least, on digital today and be available on hard media in 20 days. Aquaman is now available
$1 billion
in
movie,
digital
baby.
Media. So if you have
Oscars
not seen
2019.
Aquaman, wait, you have not seen Aquaman, Mr. Isherwood?
No.
Oh.
You haven't dragged your husband to see Aquaman?
What? We've seen Jason in person.
Really?
Oh, you did?
Yeah. We don't have to see
Aquaman. Told that story before.
A few times, you know.
At the cons, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He passed.
Well, you drew Conan.
Passed right by Amanda like this, and she swoons every time. She comes.
So when he
I wouldn't
so
have been
nice.
Able to help myself right. either.
So when he whips his hair, does he do it in slow motion?
Yeah, and it goes, you know, that... It's mm-hmm. that little nick in his eyebrow.
Does his
does
chest
it.
Actually glisten when his shirt is off? Or is that like natural?
Well,
or is that
I don't
like
know. A... You've got to ask the wife she knows.
Okay. I'll
but
ask
he was. I really liked his Conan
yes,
movie.
Yes, he says yes.
What did you think about his Conan movie in the early 2000s?
I thought he looked a lot like a John Buscema Conan, and I liked that very much.
I loved his Conan movie. I was sad that didn't go further.
I have said
yeah.
I thought it was
that. Yeah,
I've said this before, good. And I'll say it again in front of you because you are so familiar with Conan. And it's very controversial. I think that Jason Momoa's Conan was a much better representation of the character in the film than even Arnold Schwarzenegger's.
What are you saying?
I don't believe it.
I know.
No, but it's
no.
Yeah.
ow.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, Arnold had the muscles, certainly, you know,
sure.
To work it. But
Jason had the intensity, and I really
yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean,
your missus is fawning over Momoa. It's crazy. I'm sure you've.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay. Well, take this woman to see Aquaman. Okay. But it is.
I hear the soundtrack is a bit much.
Ew.
I'll tell you, I didn't even recognize it. It's all.
It's not bad. It's not bad. The score is okay. I mean, it's okay. The score itself is okay.
But then there's like a Pitbull rendition. Africa
is awful. When we reviewed this, to give you an idea,
hipsters.
Give you kind of how we felt about it when we reviewed this movie when it came out. I haven't felt like this watching a superhero movie since watching the very first Superman movie with Christopher Reeve.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how well Aquaman.
And
was
I
done.
Had to put this into kind of perspective for one of my customers is like. Because we were talking about it. There's Christopher Reeves with Superman because he pioneered the movie persona. There's Michael Keaton for Batman. And this is the first big screen Aquaman, Jason Momoa with Aquaman. So just like Gal Gadot is the big screen Wonder Woman. I know everybody knows Linda Carter as Wonder Woman's, you know, the TV show was that popular. But technically, you know, in that canon of movie superheroes. And Jason Momoa, I think, did a great job, especially... Not having to adhere to the comics.
If anyone had to like replace him, oh man, I feel so bad.
It'd be rough. Yeah, no,
they would look
so bad for whoever's going to have to play Aquaman.
Thanks in part to both Wonder Woman and Aquaman, Kevin Tsujihara has said, the man who is behind the DC movies right now, has said that they are no longer going for the team-up films. They're going to go for individual experiences with these heroes. And I think it's a good idea. It's a smart thing to do. You don't have to necessarily compete, but take these new characters and take them to places we've never seen before, and I think that those DC movies will be more successful.
I think Marvel pioneered it and DC's taking the lead is Marvel essentially, and I hate to say this, we're almost dealing with like second, third, and fourth tier characters and turn them into superstars over the course of the last
years.
What's the latest one? They're talking about some other team. It's like the team nobody ever heard of, and then they're going to do something. That was like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy was the reason why they did Guardians, because they didn't have the X-Men.
Exactly.
No,
yeah.
Like,
so there were
Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four.
Well,
that's it. Yeah.
They needed a gateway in the cosmic. The
yeah.
So what other team was available? What could they use? Yeah, exactly. Something like that had been kind of cast aside.
Well, I know for TV purposes, they were looking at Damage Control.
Yeah, they were looking at Damage Control. They were also looking at the Thunderbolts. If the Hulk films had done a little more successfully, they were gonna.
Yeah, you could see them working. They had Thunderbolt Ross in Civil War, and they were trying to intro that a little bit.
So anyway, getting back to the point, you need to drop whatever you're doing, sir, and see Aquaman.
Yeah, I plan on it.
Incredible.
Certainly,
It's pretty. It's better than I even remotely expected.
Or just That's wait good. Until the hard media thing happens.
Or just wait for that as well.
Because then you get to do it in the safety of your own home.
That's true.
Well, but it's on digital. So
it's on digital right now.
Rent it on Amazon.
You can rent it on Amazon right now. Or not rent it, but you can buy it. It's not available for rent yet. But anyway, other than that, ladies and gentlemen, this has been quite the show. First of all, can we just say we want you all to join us for Captain Marvel at the Regal Miami Megaplex at 7 o'clock over there at Maui Mall. Please join Nerd Watch and 7:30. Aaron will be there, so make sure you check that out. Also,
I'll see it 2 weeks after that.
Yeah, there you go.
Probably on a
they're sold out for the opening night.
They
night.
Are. They are
Thursday maybe.
Yeah.
We'll be able to go with you.
Magic that night. So.
You'll be able to go
maybe
somewhere
on Saturday.
Whoever happens to be in Ottawa in the next week or two, we can go with us.
Oh, sweet!
There you go.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, can we get a big round of applause for Mr. Jeff Isherwood?
Yeah.
Thank you. Jeff Isherwood,
thank you.
The legend that he is, Jeff Isherwood. Thank you so much for entertaining us and being here.
Thank you for your beautiful wife Amanda for. Waiting patiently and not getting mad at us for taking so long.
Yeah, we're actually
it's very late. Right
we're actually doing pretty good. We're good on time. So I do want to say thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week with a review of Captain Marvel. So get ready for that.
All right, that's Woo. Big.
That's going to be big. We're going to talk about Captain Marvel.
I don't like the costume.
Don't start that now, Todd. We'll be back with a full crew. It'll be a lot of fun.
She got a mohawk.
She does.
It's not accurate, though.
It's a magical mohawk.
It's a magical mohawk. It's not real.
She needs to start with the light bulb.
The black bikini. The black onesie bathing suit.
So for Todd, for Alika, for A-Rod, I, of course, am G-Money, and, of course, the amazing Jeff Isherwood.
Woo!
Peace out. Much love, and most assuredly, always stay nerdy. And we'll be back right here next week for Captain Marvel Review right here only on the Nerd Watch. And until next time, we say to you guys, aloha. We out.